Welcome back. We're into the second hour of this Monday's 9 till noon show. Thank you very much for your company. It's greatly appreciated. And your calls and comments. Just to remind you how you get involved, 086 60 25000. That's how you WhatsApp and text us. Or you give us a call too on 07491 25000. We like your emails, comments at highlandradio.com. And if you're listening to the overnight replay or the podcast, we can pick up your emails whenever you send them to us and include them into or in the next live show. And it's been a busy Monday morning on the phone lines. Finally, an important topic. The simple answer is that our government sold us out as usual. If other countries lied to achieve higher quotas, then this should be addressed. The EU don't care about Ireland, and we are the good little boys who do as we are told. And I kind of was putting that to Brendan Byrne before the news there. Successive governments sold out our fishermen to get deals for farmers. I think the last thing we need to do, though, is stop pitching farmers against fishermen, but I understand where you're coming from. And although the sprat around our coast are being fished out to make meal for fish farms, there won't be any fish at all if this continues. Well, any access to the water I have, the sea, is full of sprat. Now, obviously, I'm only operating, it sounds like I'm a fisherman, but, you know, I'm only in a certain area. It's wedged with sprat, and it seems wedged with mackerel and pollock as well. So, as I say, that's anecdotal, but maybe I'm looking at that naively. A caller says fisheries in Irish waters are the second biggest contributor to the EU economy. Ireland's contribution is the second largest, next to Germany. Without our waters, the EU economy would fail. Yet we've a ridiculously ridiculously unfair share. We are also treated as a non-EU member and do not have access to the EU immigration database due to our open border with Northern Ireland. It's a sick joke. A caller, not a big fan of Simon Harris. You wouldn't send him to shop, let alone negotiate our fishing quota. He might be quite a good negotiator. I don't know. Another caller says that successive Irish governments gave away our fishing grounds because they wanted to be the best boys in class in Europe. Good morning, Greg. The offenders of a road traffic collision should be made go around to campaign to schools, colleges and all training educational institutions and the public to help to explain what has happened in their lives and the efforts of the lives of those affected by their actions. That does happen. I mean, and that's one string to our bow, but it's not enough. We're doing quite a lot of that. We're trying to hit young people with that information, but still we are seeing crazy driving on the roads, and obviously that leads to an increase in road traffic collisions. A caller says, on the Garda issue, it's very demoralising for Garda, who do their job, get cases in front of the courts and then see the prosecution fall down on some technicality. Crazy that Garda have to be present at court also. Surely this could be better done so Garda time is used on the beat. Yeah, there was a case thrown out not too long ago because a guard simply was unavailable to attend court on the given day. Good morning. I see the same car every morning at the same time, parked outside the same pub in our town. He doesn't care. Stands out smoking in full view of the guards, especially when court is on. Staggers across the road into his car. I'm sick at the thought of what could happen and how the hell this person is getting away with it. Other comments here. Racism in Ireland is being grossly exaggerated to support a narrative that justifies a political agenda. Our attacks on the Irish by migrants, not racist, and they far outnumber attacks on migrants by the Irish. Listen, in both instances, both are actually being exaggerated, I think. Not exaggerated, over-amplified. Both are issues that need addressing. Okay, both are issues that need addressing. But I think both sides, the counterpoint that, you know, there's way more attacks by migrants than Irish, that's not backed up by statistics. And if the truth be told, and I'm not in any way playing down, but statistics don't back up an increase on Irish attacks on immigrants, for an example, or people of colour. So I think both sides there are kind of battling statistics that they can't really back up their argument with. But instead, let's try and eliminate both. Would that be an option? But anyway, I'll read on to give this listener the respect they deserve. But we seldom hear about them. An Garda Síochána confirmed that there's been no increase in attacks on the Indian community in Ireland, but we are led to believe the opposite is true. The problem is with their pulse system. Sometimes the racial motive is not actually registered on the system, but it's like all these statistics. Everyone's twisting them to suit their own point of view. Another caller says, we have to pose the question, why are these racial attacks happening? What social inequalities are perceived by the attackers. Is there any truth to these perceptions? How do we rectify these possessions or rectify these perceptions? Like, there's always going to be people who will pick on people for different reasons. And I just feel, like, say, for instance, let's say, for instance, when there was recent controversy in Northern Ireland and people took to the streets, like, there was a large proportion of people thought, right, I can go and do this now. I don't really care about the social issues. That's not why I'm doing it. But I'm young. I can have a go at the police. I can rebel a little bit. I can fill my evening. And I think to some extent, because there's such an open conversation now about immigration and that type of stuff in this country, that there are a group of individuals that will beat you up because they don't like that your hairstyle, but now are beating people up because of their skin colour, if that makes sense. Like, I think we need to sort of drill down and analyse what exactly is going on. Two words for racism, says the listener: upbringing, rearing. Yeah, that is one of those ones where it's nurture and not nature. Because kids 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 years of age can all be in the same classroom and all be friends. At some point, though, nurture takes over and their relationship breaks down. Why the shock that Garda members' traffic divisions were lacklustre in carrying out duties, says a listener. This has been the case since the formation of the state and is not just limited to road offences. Certain privileged groups in Ireland have always benefited from Garda incompetence whenever offences have been committed. Will these things change? Not a chance. Status and brown envelopes will always triumph justice in this country, believes the listener. Who said that Enda Kenny was very well liked in the USA? What a barometer of measurement. Well, the USA is a broad church, so, you know, I don't know if you're pro-Trump or anti-Trump, but it sounds like your comment is motivated by a feeling in that regard. Greg, Trump thinks he's a great negotiator. Well, he thinks he's a great at everything. Would a great negotiator just say no comment yesterday when he was asked about the meeting in Alaska? I think a real negotiator would do his talking at the meeting rather than on a press conference. Anyway, there's also a school of thought that thinks that Trump is a Russian agent. I'm not going to say he's... I think he likes to be liked by Russia. I think he thinks for the US economy, there is a great benefit in Russia and America being friends. And the fly in the ointment is Ukraine. And Trump wants to get Ukraine sorted, not for the people of Ukraine or not for the people of Europe, I don't think, but actually for the business interests of America. But also, I think he likes to be liked by the Russians as well. I think he'd love to be going through Moscow in a cavalcade. I read in the paper that when the farmer comes to pension age, he won't get subsidies on the farm. Is this true? Well, I don't know. Let's put it out there. If you hit the pension age, do your subsidies stop? A caller says, I'd have Conor McGregor for president before I'd have Bertie Ahern, and that's saying something. I can't believe a man who broke this country and regarded it as a personal financial playground for himself is at 15%. Now, let me see. Well done to those amazing young lads. Weren't they fantastic too? I'm sure their families are so proud, but why wouldn't you be? Three brilliant young, strong men, so articulate as well, sitting there doing a radio interview. They couldn't see me, actually, because of a quirk of the way we communicated with them. But they sat there, so articulate, passing the story amongst themselves. Really, really, we are all proud of them because they're all our boys, if you know what I mean, but their families particularly should be. Is Heather Humphrey up to being president? Remember her words, politicians are human too. We give all we can for as long as we can, but time catches up on us all. As I get older, my health and energy levels are not what they were, and I know going forward that I would not be able to give the job the time and commitment it deserves. Will the media report this? Well, we're the media, we just have. She changed her mind. Now, where is her consistency? Sadly, she may get elected to continue the 100-year-plus rule by Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil monopoly of incompetency and exploitation of the ordinary man and woman. Let's not overstate the role of president. Would she make a good president for shaking the hands of the football players before the All-Ireland final, or, you know, welcoming Bonnie Prince Charles to Ireland, or whatever it might be? That's what she has to do. She doesn't have to work hard. I think really, though her words could catch her out there, it's a good quote that you picked up on, and thanks for sharing it with us. Dolores on Facebook says she'd prefer if Sinn Féin would back Catherine Connolly in their view. Thank you for that. Anthony is watching from Donegal Horizons. Hello. We were down with you not so long ago. Hope everyone is good there. Beth, Audrey and Hillary all watching on Facebook as well. 086 60 25,000 if you want to text or comment on our stream. I want to do a few requests as we do around about this time for those of you celebrating a special event. Could you do a shout out to the councilman on the gap on Friday who helped a damsel in distress get to work? He let me and others follow him through Frosses when the gap was closed. Hi, please wish Jim and Anne O'Brien Ruffo a very happy 60th wedding anniversary from her granddaughter Amanda and Daryl, great-grandchildren Alec, Archie and Maisie. A shout out to Auntie Abby, who's home from Clare, and to Granny and Granda Coyle in Tara Court from Billy in Remelton. Another one on that. And last one for now. Hi, my name is Angela Dalton. I live in Castlefin, but my parents, William and Sheila Moriarty, who live in Letterkenny, are 60 years married. They were married in Gort in County Galway in 1965. They listened to Highland Radio every day, and it would be lovely if you could play a song for them to celebrate this day. They're avid listeners of your morning show at 10 a.m. to lunchtime. Start listening from 9, please. They were a fantastic jiving couple, going to dances every Saturday and love music. Dad can still give a fantastic rendition of Spancel Hill, while Mum's tune was the Galway Shore. Wishing them a very happy 60th wedding anniversary from their daughter Angela, son-in-law Mick, grandson Aaron 5, and daughter-in-law Anna, Connor and Nicole, Rory and Amy, Kieran and Megan and Daniel, son Liam Moriarty and Letterkenny, daughter-in-law Louise, and granddaughters Alana and Katie. I hope you can play a song for them. They'd love it, as Mum Sheila only got out of Letterkenny Hospital last Monday. Thank you for your cooperation on this. Thanks, Angela. Well, they're regular listeners, and they know that we don't get a chance to play music on this show ordinarily, so we'll get some music on for them to have a wee jive to, maybe if they're up to it a little later on. But for now, all I can do is pass on my heartiest congratulations. 60 years together, fantastic. And what a family you have. We read out their names there. Brilliant stuff. Now, we discussed the issue of these wee brown bins that you get, and we kind of didn't really have a say in it. They kind of landed at the houses for many of us. I know all about this myself. And then some people realised they were being charged a standing charge, effectively, for the bin. Many people dispose of the waste responsibly and don't really need the bin, so they're being faced with a bill that does tot up over time, and there's been mixed reports, and some of them quite negative, about opting out of it. People being told, well, it's kind of compulsory, not much you can do. And so Mary's going to give us an insight into this, actually, and tease the conversation out a little more. Mary, thank you so much for joining me for a chat. How are you keeping?
I'm fine, thank you, and good morning to you and your listeners.
Right, good morning to you.
I suppose where I come from is, having lived in Dublin, we had the three bins for many, many years, the green, the black and the brown, and it was a brown two-wheel 140-litre bin. So I was somewhat surprised when Panda started rolling out a 23-litre brown bin and a 7-inch caddy. And when the gentleman called into the bin, I said, you know, I don't really need the 23, I would like a 140-litre bin to take in the grass cuttings, hedge cuttings, and food waste. There's only two of us in the house, but it does accumulate time, especially when you have visitors. And he says, well, we'll contact Letterkenny, which I did, and I said, none in stock, don't know when they're getting them in, and I asked, could my name be put on a priority list? But the number that I rang for Letterkenny, I think, is actually a call centre number, as it later transpired. I took the 23-litre bin here, small one, and again, it's full at the end of 2 weeks. Carried out to the end of the road, it's quite heavy. So the flyer with it was from Panda Group in Dublin. Mm-hmm. That was their address in it, and we had a customer care Panda email address. So I said, right, I'll email them directly. And again, I was told, not available in your area, but they wouldn't explain what that meant. And I thought, this is really, really strange. So I asked how much it costs, $4.20 a month. Okay, fine. I keep waiting for my 140-litre bin, and I work with a 23-litre. At the beginning of June, $12.60 was taken from my account. I thought, that's a lot. That's a huge drop. Once you get your text, and the amount of money is in the text, but it doesn't say what it's for. It just says a drop. Was a drop in it. So I contacted customer care, and they said, oh, we've taken 3 months' charge from you. And I said, but you didn't have permission to do that. And I thought, this is really, really strange. And they said, no, that's the way it works. So I Again, I accepted that, except the following month, the same thing happened. So this time I ring the customer care in Letterkenny, and they say, finally come back and said, that was a mistake. That two amounts of 1260 were taken from me instead of 420. And I thought, well, I can't be the only one that happened to. So I would ask your customers to check back on their text to see what happened around that time. Now, if you never use your brown bin, you will still be charged 420. And as you said, people in Donegal are responsible, and they have their own ways of disposing, be it through compost, and especially in farms, it's easier to do that. But there's some of us that do need a bin, so we were happy enough to pay for it. Now, bear in mind, at the moment, we're paying €5 a month for a service charge for green waste and recycling bins, a lift charge of €12.50 for waste, and a lift charge of €6 for recycling. And I do recollect some programmes saying that the rollout of the brown bins would mean a saving to householders, because we wouldn't be putting the brown bins out, or sorry, the black bins out that often. And that makes sense. So I went on to my account with Panda and looked at the invoices. And a lot of people forget that that part, you can actually see the invoice against the text. And it said government mandated compost service charge. I thought, that's strange. Why call it government mandated? It's just a service charge. What's the big secret? And when people see that, of course, they get, anxious and say, oh, God, this is directed by the government. I better pay it, because they're afraid, naturally, of being in arrears. But checking the regulations, the government don't set the service charge, nor is it passed on to them.
And it's that's charged whether you put the bin out or not, as it is with the black bin. Anyway, absolutely. My situation is, if I don't put the black bin out, I'm still charged. It's just nothing's picked up.
You're still charged. You're still charged. So I went into the regulations, being a former civil servant, I suppose you dig a bit deeper when you see things like this happening. And it says that your bin collection company must keep a record of customers who don't use their brown bin service. And that you, all you need to do is give them a note to say, I have an alternative way of disposing of my waste. And that's all you have to do. So what they've done is they've rolled this out. 420 a month comes to €50.40 per year. That'll pay your medical bills. That'll pay your food bill for a week. And over 10 years, that's a lot of money. But they weren't open and transparent to people in the beginning.
So are you at the point, is your situation that the 23-litre bin is so small it's not worth the money? So are you looking to cancel it, or are you continuing to use it? Because you need the bigger bin, because that matches your needs better.
Absolutely. By default, when I was on holidays, another small 23-litre bin was delivered here. And I didn't know who it belonged to, because there's a microchip in all the bins. So I rang and I said, who does this belong to? But they couldn't tell me. So then please take it and give it to the person that it belongs to. And then I got a brainwave, well, sure, maybe they can reassign it to me. And that would help me manage the 23-litre bin. So when I got speaking to the correct person, in person, eventually, it transpires that the Panda Group has a policy that if you live in rural Donegal, you will never get a 140-litre bin.
There's an urban-rural rule then, so obviously they've got one urban policy, one rural policy.
Right. But they haven't told anybody about it. It's like the third secret of Fatima. Nobody knows about it. And so I could have been asking for the next 10 years for a large bin, and I wouldn't have got it from them. Now, that's saying I have since got it via different way, because somebody was nice and somebody realised, well, actually, where you live in Dunfanaghy, at the beginning of the Horn Head Road, is actually urban. You're not out in the country. But it shouldn't be based on urban-rural. It should be based on domestic needs.
If we're serious about why we have the bins in the first place, because if you have more stuff, you need a bigger bin. If you've left stuff smaller. If you've no stuff, no bin. You know, it's not complicated.
It's not complicated. And I understand one of your callers 2 weeks ago brought the bin back to Letterkenny and he got refunded. But why should you have to go drive the whole way to Letterkenny? Not everybody has that way of transport. To me, they were happy enough to come out and roll this out to every house. But now they should go back to every customer and say, sorry, this is what we should have done. We should have asked what you wanted. 23-litre brown bin or 140-litre brown bin, which is the wheels.
Yeah.
Do you want it to avail of the compost service at all? If yes, we'll give you that, one or either of them. Or if you don't want to avail of it, just a little note to say, and we'll move on.
Because if you give them a note explaining why, that covers them, because there is that opt out, yeah. So they can also yeah, to. I mean, like it's one of these things that just popped up. A small brown bin just arrived at our house. I don't know who's it from or what the crack is, to be honest with you. And then the 420 starts coming out. I mean, if you multiply that by a couple of thousand people, I mean, we're talking big money here. And how many of those people are actually availing of a service? I mean, it's a bit. It requires a bit more scrutiny, I think.
Like transparency. I mean, the background is Panda Weirs are actually owned by Panda Global, as that they have a presence in most of the counties in the Republic. But they're now owned by an Australian investment firm. So somewhere along the way, the word profit is the top of the agenda. Those brown bins are probably cheap enough to buy in off-site somewhere and rolled out.
Oh, would they be buying them in? They'd be buying them in such bulk that I would say they're very cheap. So, just to be clear, you're now satisfied. You're getting you have a 140-litre brown bin now, and you're being charged 420. You're happy with that, but it took a bit of a battle. You're okay with that now. You're not happy with the lack of transparency.
I'm also charged a lift charge of $5.50 for the brown bin.
Right.
No, I don't mind that.
Okay.
I'm charged a lift charge for the green bin and the black bin. But I'm not sure why we should have two service charges.
Mm.
A €5 one and a €4.20 one. I'm not sure why we should have two. That's €9.20 a month, and it's a lot for a lot of people.
Mm. Well, it's a lot. It is because...
You know, there's no explanation for what the service charge is covering. So why two service charges?
I presume the service charge is for the bin. I presume you're paying in for the bin. I can only imagine that's the reason, no? Or to cover some admin?
The admin, fine, but the €5 charge covers the green bin and the black bin.
Yeah.
The now €4.20 service charge covers a brown bin, in which case brown bins that are not being collected, not wanted in a lot of cases. But it just adds to the whole confusion, let's say.
Mm.
There's no appeals mechanism. There's nothing in that on their website. There's no information on how they decide on rural urban areas. At the end of the day, that shouldn't be the criteria. It should be based on need.
But we've also spoke to a couple of people who were told, no, this is mandatory, and took that at face value and just says, oh, all right, then sure, everyone's... Yeah. You know, that's problematic for me as well, because some people just they go, oh, right, okay, well... Blooming government. Do you know that sort of a way? But then just soak it up.
Absolutely. And as I said, as a former public servant, I can blame government at times, but where there is no blame should be attributed to them in this case.
Yeah.
This should have been rolled out through the country many years ago. As I said, it's in Dublin for a long time. It's working perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a simple thing. A segregation of waste.
And what do you like? Do you use yours for like grass or old flowers or chicken carcasses? Is that the kind of stuff you're using yours for?
Yes, it's everything green and brown.
Yeah.
Garden waste, hedge waste. We all have little gardens. Mm-hmm. The grass has to go somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Even people living in the country may not have the means to dispose of brown waste.
Well, for sure.
And could still prefer 140-litre bin.
Yeah. Yeah, those little bins, I do wonder. I mean, there's a little bin and then a little bin. And I looked at them and I was like, you know, I know one's like a caddy for the house, but the other bin, and I'm thinking, you know, what's this for? I mean, in my context, I have nothing to put into it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have nothing to put into it. It's just the way the food in our house, there's just no leftovers, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that can happen a lot of cases. But sometimes when your people staying, and everybody's needs are different.
Yeah.
And even the little caddy, that costs money to make and roll out. A lot of us have our own caddies at this stage.
Yeah.
Just and we didn't need a second caddy.
Exactly.
So it should have been down to choice.
A lot of those caddies are actually integrated into modern kitchens.
In
the kitchen. Okay, listen, it's a fascinating insight, Mary. We've made to try and progress this so your call has more worth. We've contacted Panda as well just to find out what the situation is. And I think to make it very clear, who gets a 23 litre bin, who gets a 140 litre bin, and how easy should it be, how easy can they make it to opt out if you don't need one at all? Because as you say, 420 adds up very, very quickly. If you do not need it whatsoever, you know, that could be your Sky Sports for 2 months, for crying out loud. I know that sounds silly, but you know, these are little things people might be sacrificing. All right, listen, thanks, Mary. Lovely to talk to you. Thanks for making it so clear for me to understand. Have a lovely day. Keep on composting. Okay, we're back talking about the reality, the lived reality for blind and vision impaired people in doing something as simple as using a footpath. There are many, many challenges, many obstacles. We were just talking about bins there. That's one of the problems. But hedges dangling down, all that type of stuff. And Kevin Kelly's Head of Policy and External Affairs at Vision Ireland. And Kevin, it's great to have you back on the show. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and to your listeners.
I just find it quite regrettable that we're doing this every year. You know, that we're talking about the same thing and it's not landing. Do you know what I mean? People who are blind or visually impaired are having the same experiences, and many, many of them are. So I know we're rehashing it, but that's the sad thing that we have to, Kevin, because, you know, as I say, the problem is not getting better, it seems.
No, year on year, the data, as you say, is remarkably similar. And that's why Vision Ireland runs this campaign as an annual campaign to draw awareness and ask the public to take action and pause and have a thought and more consideration for people who are blind and vision impaired, who do face these temporary obstacles when they go out and about. Almost 300 people participated in our survey this year, with almost 100% of those surveyed citing that they do encounter temporary obstacles every time they go outside their front door, which is very alarming, a little bit off-putting for some, particularly those who are maybe new to sight loss, who are building up their confidence, with 71% of participants saying that a collision with a temporary obstacle affects their confidence and may stop them from going out and about independently themselves. And we've discussed it on the programme previously, Greg, about some of the challenges that come from, you know, social isolation, people not getting out and about and participating in society. And a lot of the obstacles are things that are put in place by other people that are unnecessary. Things like, you know, parking your car across a path just because you're running into the shop and you'd think you're only going to be there for 5 minutes to grab a litre of milk. But in those 5 minutes, somebody who's blind or vision impaired could come along, not be able to pass your vehicle safely, either has the choice of having to wait, which is very inconvenient and very unfair, but oftentimes will have to step out onto the roadway into oncoming traffic, which places them at an unnecessary risk.
Well, it robs them potentially too of independence. A lot of this is avoidable. 96% of people regularly encounter hazards such as wheelie bins. Simple thing. Don't put your wheelie bin on a footpath. If you collect wheelie bins, be careful where you put it afterwards. Parked cars, you mentioned, overgrown branches and on footpaths. So whether it's a council's responsibility or private homeowners, don't come at me with you can't cut hedges because it's against the law. I don't want to hear that. You know exactly what we're talking about here. If you're over 6 foot yourself, aren't you? You know, consider someone who might be walking along and next thing you know, they get a hedge straight into the face. Now imagine that happening twice, and then imagine trying to go about your daily business without constantly worrying that this is going to happen again. That's how we need to get into that mindset, I think.
We definitely do, and that's one of the things that we want to highlight this year, and you're dead right around hedge cutting. There is no ban on hedge cutting if it protrudes on a public footpath or on a roadway which is endangering pedestrian safety or road safety. Those hedges can be trimmed back and pruned at any time of the year. A number of our respondents, and I've had the unpleasure of this myself, where you end up with cuts and scrapes to your face as a result of overhanging branches, and all of that takes is the homeowner to cut back their hedge to a sufficient height. Last year was a particularly busy year in terms of electoral events, and we often face the problem with election posters being hung at head height and below the permitted level, which again ends up with people getting those those corner of those posters into the corner of their eyes, on their face, cuts, gashes. All of these things are completely avoidable. People take more responsibility.
I think, too, what we should also factor in, whether someone was born blind or acquired an issue with their vision whereby they are now visually impaired, the courage it takes, I think, to go out, to exercise your independence, to participate in society and going around, especially on your own or with a cane or even with a dog. And that in and of itself, I think, should be encouraged and embraced, rather than, I don't know what the figure is of people that said, right, it's not worth the hassle, I'm staying in the house, and then become unseen themselves.
Yeah, we don't have a precise number on that, but certainly through the anecdotal evidence that we captured during the survey, we did have respondents saying that these obstacles that they encounter, the injuries that they encounter, the collisions, even if it's not resulting in a hospital or a GP visit, all of those things do make it more challenging for someone to get up the courage to go out and about independently with their long cane and their guide dog, particularly someone who is relatively new to sight loss or has deteriorating sight. Someone like myself, who lost my sight 20 years ago, it's annoying, it's frustrating. You want to curse the person that left the bin there, didn't cut back their branches, but you know, I'll get up and get on with it. But for those who are adjusting to sight loss, that independence, getting out of the house, learning those new skills to learn how to use your long cane, the actions of others are causing people to be less confident, less likely to go out and about and re-engage with society. And 296,000 people, according to the last census, are living with a significant vision impairment. People are living longer, thankfully. Age-related sight loss is on the rise. So it may not affect you today or tomorrow, but in 10 years, it very may well be. And you might think back to, you know, the annual Clear or PATH campaign to Vision Ireland, or the conversations that were, you know, had on Highland Radio each year. And you might find yourself, you know, encountering somebody's wheelie bin or hedge that wasn't cut back. So it may not affect you today, but at some point in the future, it may affect you, or it may affect a family member or a friend.
Yeah, because, you know, we need to see these 300,000 people. It's a significant proportion of the population, and they need to be out. We need to see them with their long cane. We need to see them with their dogs. And it's up to each individual whether they wish or can, but we need to be making sure that our spaces are as accommodating as is possible. And that includes issues like, you know, traffic lights having the appropriate supporting sounds and matters like that. Obviously, the bins, the cars, they're obvious. We know that. But there are other obvious issues as well. Street furniture. Obviously, we saw a massive outflux, I suppose you could say, of that during COVID. But bikes being left against lampposts, e-scooters, they're all over the place now. Dog poo, that's a big issue as well. And that's more disgusting, perhaps, than it is, you know, injury-inducing. But this is not just an inconvenience or a scratch to the face, which in and of itself would be bad enough. Many, many of your respondents of the 300 ended up having to seek treatment for injuries, really quite serious injuries. And my God, the bravery then it would take to go back into the big, bad world again. I can't imagine. I don't think I have it in me, to be honest with you, Kevin, but hopefully I could find it somewhere.
Yeah, 16% of those surveyed as a result of a collision with a temporary obstacle required a doctor's visit or a hospital appointment. So in real numbers, that's 44 people out of 281 people who participated in the survey. These injuries, you know, beyond the cuts and gashes, as you say yourself, were sprained wrists and ankles, broken legs, broken arms, broken wrists, all sorts of very serious injuries, and are bound to rock your confidence, are likely to make you less wanting to go out by yourself. And to be honest with you, if your loved one, you know, sprained their wrist because they were blind and they were using their long cane and they collided with a bin or another form of temporary obstacle, you're probably not going to be encouraging them the next time to go out and about by themselves, because you don't want to see them having to go to the GP or the hospital again. So the effect spirals, and it has a denting effect on the confidence of the whole family who are adjusting to the new reality of someone in their household having sight loss.
All right. Listen, thanks, Kevin. I'm sorry that you're articulating it differently, don't get me wrong, but I'm sorry that you're having to repeat yourself, because these surveys are throwing up the same responses all the time. But listen, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate your time. Kevin Kelly there, Head of Policy and External Affairs at Vision Ireland. Have you been to the zoo, like one of the big zoos, you know, the city zoos? We went to the zoo yesterday, and what do you think of zoos? Like, we had a fantastic day and we walked around and there was a group of us and with the kids with us and it was great crack. But, geez, I left thinking, man, I don't know if zoos should exist at all. Like, you know, sorry for changing the subject. It just came into my head and I was curious what other people think. Like, the big animals, your lions and your tigers and your leopards and your gorillas and all, like, they're just lying there. Now, I know it was warm, but it was warm yesterday, about 20, 21 degrees. I don't think that should be too warm for these animals, like, catching shade, or maybe they've just eaten. I don't know. But they're lying around there, and I was just thinking what it must be like if you're sitting there looking out at people looking at you. If it was humans, you know, you might be excited for 5 or 6 weeks, but then you'd just sit in the corner going, when's this going to end? And maybe the argument for them is, like, sort of a conservation issue. I don't know. Most of them didn't seem to be endangered, but I don't. The smaller animals seem to love it. The seals were great, and you know, the giraffes have long necks and all that kind of crack. But the rest of them, they just, I felt like I was participating in something that's not fantastic. I do know we've got some local, and I'm not just saying this, but we've got local stuff that's fantastic, and I've been to it, and You know, these are animals that maybe have been rescued, or they're in environments that are better suited to give them a life. And you can see it in their activity and the movement. But I was at this big zoo outside the city, and I just was like, what am I doing here? Why are they here? They don't want to be here. I don't think there's any benefit to them. And they're just lying there. It could be stuffed animals. Half the stuff wasn't there either. But have you been to the big zoos? What do you think of them? Is there a place for them? Maybe there is. I don't know. But maybe I'm getting soft, or maybe I miss my emotions are misplaced. But I was walking around going, you know, I've paid £14.50 sterling here to come in and see a gorilla lying there. So apathetic, so drained, or maybe it was just sleeping. I don't know. Do you have a view? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApp and texts to that number. Let me take a quick break before we squeeze in another guest before the news. Now, Celeste is with me now. Hi, Celeste.
Hi.
Lovely name, by the way, if you don't mind me saying.
Thank you so much.
Now, you've a bus problem. Give us the rundown, Celeste.
Okay, so Saturday morning, we were taking the 9:45 bus from Rifo to Letterkenny.
Mm-hmm.
We waited till about 10:30. Passengers were accumulating. There were people that had to go to work in Strabane and Lifford, and they've been waiting there since 8 o'clock this morning, or Saturday morning.
Wow.
We got notification, I think, 20 to 30 minutes later on Bus Erin's website that the buses are cancelled for Saturday.
Mm.
Now, the problem is this left many of us stranded if we had shopping or work to go to, not knowing what are we going to do, how are we going to get into town. So some of us got taxis there, which is expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, you're only paying, what? $4.80 on a Leap card and $5.80 cash on a bus to Letterkenny.
Everyone would have the taxi money either. And some people might be dropped at Rifo, and then whomever dropped them off leave.
That's it.
Mm.
But the problem is, when we got into Letterkenny to come back home, there was no notifications to say buses cancelled for the evening.
Mm.
It was only later when we at the bus station, oh no, buses are cancelled, on their website. Not at the office, on their website when we're waiting for the buses.
And was this a once-off, Celeste? Or has it happened since?
It's happened again today.
Oh, right.
Apparently the 12:30 bus from Strabane to Letterkenny has been cancelled.
Uh-huh.
And then the half four bus from Letterkenny to Strabane has been cancelled. But it's quite frank, it puts a person off going with the buses because you can't plan your day ahead.
You can't trust it. You have to be able to trust the system service.
And you can't trust them because you don't know if you're going to go to Letterkenny. Is that the only bus that's cancelled?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Because they do it in such short notice, and trying to get hold of them, that's another joke.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're going to try and get hold of them and get an answer for you, Celeste, and see what the story is. I probably could write the press release myself, but we're going to try and find out what the crack is and maybe get a sense of how many cancellations there have been. Thank you so much for your time. That is Celeste. Have you other experiences of that, listeners? Let us know.